Recorded Books and One-Click Digital present 1635, The Eastern Front, by Eric Flint. Narrated by me, George Guidel. Prologue. The Upper Folkland, June 1635.
"They've passed on, Georg," said Wilhelm Kufer, as soon as he came down the ladder. "I think those soldiers are just deserters. On their way out of Saxony altogether, probably see no reason to get ground under the Swedes' boot."
Georg Kresser nodded. "Probably. If they're some of Holk's men, almost certainly. All those thugs were ever good for was savaging unarmed civilians. The last thing they want is to get caught in a real war." Neither Kresser nor Kufer bothered to whisper. This far into the abandoned tin mine that Georg Kresser and his people had taken over as a base of operations, there was no chance that anyone outside the mine could hear him. Kufer could have shouted and not been noticed by anyone in the open. That was one of the advantages of using the mine. It offset the many disadvantages, among which darkness and dampness ranked high on Kufer's list. Wilhelm had had no trouble seeing Kresser nodding, though. The problem wasn't darkness in itself. They had plenty of lamps, donated to them by their supporters and sympathizers in the Folkland. The problem was that the oil lamps emitted fumes, which, given the poor air circulation in the mine, added to the problems caused by cooking fires. Whenever they could, Kresser's people did their cooking outside, but that option wasn't always possible. They did have one flashlight, as the smokeless American lamp was called, but it was no longer operating. The device required batteries to operate, and by the time they made that discovery, by exhausting the energies of said batteries, it was too late to do anything about it. Kresser's agents had made inquiries to see if the batteries could be replaced. But by now, 4 years after the Ring of Fire, such batteries had become scarce and extremely expensive. New batteries were being manufactured, they'd learned, using a combination of uptime knowledge and available downtime techniques. They even worked, by all accounts. But they were reportedly much too large and cumbersome to be fit into the slender flashlight. So the once delightful gadget was now useless. It wouldn't even make a very good club. But they kept it anyway, less as a memento than something in the way of a symbol for the future. That more or less summarized their general attitude toward Americans. For Georg Kresser and his followers in the Folkland, as for rebels throughout the Germanies, throughout all of Europe for that matter, the real importance of the uptimers was mostly symbolic, rather than practical. Like most such rebel groups, they'd had no significant direct contact with the Americans. That was hardly surprising. There had only been 3,500 Americans to begin with, right after the Ring of Fire had transported their town of Grantville through time back into the 17th century. By now, 500 or so of those had died. Some of the deaths had been casualties of war, and others had resulted from epidemics. For the most part, though, the deaths had been a simple product of human realities. The population of Grantville had been disproportionately elderly, and many of those old people had relied on uptime medicines to stay alive. Most of those medicines had vanished after the Ring of Fire. Now, perched in the middle of what the uptimers called the 30 Years' War, the death rate among those of them who were elderly or sickly had been severe. From the standpoint of the 17th century, they'd been living on borrowed time. The number of Europeans, or even Germans and Bohemians, who had actual relations with the Americans was comparatively minuscule. True, uptime technology was spreading much more widely and rapidly than the uptimers themselves. But for most people, that technology was still on a level with Kresser's flashlight. One or two minor gadgets. Even an uptime rifle was nothing more than a temporarily handy gadget in the long run, except insofar as it could be at least partially duplicated. For all of their partiality toward the uptimers, there were some things about the Americans that irritated Kresser and his people. What they'd heard of them, rather. Except for Anna Piesel, none of them had ever met an American in person, and Anna's contact had been brief and incidental. She'd literally bumped into the man as he came out of a tavern she was entering in Saalfeld. He'd said, "Excuse me," in heavily accented Amideutsch, and gone on his way. The great gift the uptimers had given rebels throughout the Germanies, indeed throughout Europe,